there was this front page story in the New York Times Saturday. Google's plan for out-of-print books is challenged. Did anybody happen to read this story? Okay. So, what's the story here? This is a textbook case. It's actually a good story, by the way. So I'll post it. So it explains the situation pretty well. This is a textbook case of digital technology throwing something quite ancient, you know, quite deeply embedded in societal structures out of whack. Not in a way that wasn't possible in principle before, but was impossible in practice until the internet and search engines and all these technologies that we spent some time talking about before. So what's Google Books? Anybody ever looked at a page out of a Google Book? Okay, so what's the deal?
So they have books online, but they're typically not the full books. They'll just have excerpts from chapters.
Right. So they, what they do is I just did a little search on, I did a Google search on blown to bits, okay, in quotes here, and get my blog and all the rest of that, but you also get this Google Books result, which happens to be for another book called Blown to Bits. Turns out there are three of them. So for some reason, the one that they happen to have scanned in is the one that's actually published by Harvard Business School Press. So here it is. And as the gentleman said, you can flip through it, and it'll show you some pages of this. This book is about, it's less than 10 years old. This is a business-related book, and you can actually read lots of it. Anybody ever wanted to get a single factoid that you knew was somewhere in the book and search for it rather than going to the library? Yeah, I've done that. Didn't want to read the whole book anyway. Just, you know, I knew there was something in there, a phrase or something like that, that particular fact. But, you know, as you go through it, you get notices like this. Some pages are omitted from this book preview. It won't show you the whole book. Why won't it show you the whole book? It's copyrighted. It's a copyrighted book because it's only about, you know, 7 years old or something like that. If we search for, I haven't actually tried this, but let's see if we can, Hunchback of Notre Dame, which is out of copyright. We get the movie here. Is there a books result? Yeah, there's a books result. Okay, nice old French edition. Okay, and I think you can see the whole thing. Right? There's none of those, you know, sorry, we've omitted this. So Google, a few years ago, started just scanning everything. Well, not everything. Everything they could get their hands on. They started going through, by arrangement with Harvard, they started going through the Harvard Library. Harvard wouldn't let them scan the books that were still in copyright. But they were scanning books that were in copyright from other libraries and from their own purchases. They would just go out and buy books and scan them in. And they were challenged on this. So let's sort of analyze the two sides of this dispute as it comes up. So they were challenged by representative of the Authors Guild. It turns out authors have their own union that they can pay dues to, I guess. I don't never quite realize it, but they do. It's supposed to represent our interests as authors and publishers, which is a separate association, on the basis that they were copying stuff that was, to which the authors and publishers had exclusive rights. And Google's response was essentially, but we're not showing the whole book the way we are with things that are so old that the copyright, that they're out of copyright. We're just showing, you know, samples. And by there's a long-standing convention called fair use that you can quote from a copyrighted work in a limited way, not in its entirety, for the purposes of criticism or news coverage or other purposes. This is, you know, what fair use actually means has been hammered out by case law. It's not in the Constitution anywhere. So they said this is fair use. It's kind of the same as, you know, a book review. If somebody writes a book review and they quote a paragraph from the book they're reviewing and say, you know, the author, you know, is confused because, you know, he refers to the detective as a man at the first sentence and as a woman at the in the last sentence, and, you know, shows you the text that demonstrates the mistakes the author has made in the process of critiquing the author. That's not illegal, even though the book is under copyright. So, you know, there's always been an assumption that you can do a little bit of fair use, a little bit of quotation for fair use. So that was sort of Google's posture. But then the authors and the publishers group, the opposing group, turned out and said, yeah, but what about making the copy itself, right? You scanned in the whole book. You've got a copy. We didn't say you could have a copy. I mean, whatever, you know, without acknowledging your point that you're only, you know, that you think it's fair use only to show little pieces of the book, you know, who said that you could go into, you know, Lamont Library, take a copy of Blown to Bits, and essentially Xerox the whole thing and take it back to Mountain View, which is just what you've done. You know, and now you're saying you're just showing people little pieces of it. And Google, to be fair, and then go back to the where we had it, or I've lost it. But, you know, when Google gives you a Google Books result, it'll actually tell you where you can find it. You know, it'll like put up references to used bookstores or new bookstores or Amazon or libraries where you might be able to find it, and you know, and so on. So there Google makes the additional argument. They say, well, you know, we're actually helping book sales. We're not taking anything away from book sales. We're actually helping you. You know, leave us alone. Okay, so anybody have any reactions so far? This is actually a tricky story. And I haven't shown you, you know, we haven't sort of done a primer on copyright law, although we kind of did earlier in the course. It was in the context of images and sounds rather than books. But, you know, there's a whole set of issues about how long copyright is. We're not going to deal with that right now. But, you know, these are things that are plainly in copyright. Yeah.
So is the big issue here that Google is putting up excerpts from copyrighted material?
That's right. I don't think anybody objects to showing the world The Hunchback of Notre Dame, because it's out of copyright. So, you know, Victor Hugo is not around to say don't do it, and it wouldn't matter if he were around, because it's so old that it's in the public domain is the technical term. It's in the public domain now. Anybody can do anything they want with The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Well, I mean, I guess that it's the two things I said. The one you just mentioned, the fact that they're showing people pages of the book. But there's this prior question that they would say, you know, by scanning these books in, you know, you personally have created a copy that you're not allowed. You know, Google has itself created a copy. Why should Google have, I mean, you know, could I go into Widener Library and Xerox everything and create my own copy of Widener Library and keep it in my house legally? And so then, you know, why should Google be able to do it? Yeah?
Well, I was going to say, I think the claims become a little ridiculous, unless they're claiming that they're like being hurt by this or losing profit.
Right.
The very fact that they're in the library means they're accessible to the public. And so, like, it's more of, like, will you make me get up and physically walk to the library to get the book, or can I just look online to find it?
And just peek online. It's not even really...
Right, not even find the full book.
Read the whole book online. So there's an economic... There's a sort of an economic argument that comes into play, as indeed it does when courts, you know, settle these copyright disputes. One of the factors they try to take into account is it actually costing the publisher money or the copyright owner money? Are they losing revenues that they would otherwise, you know, have been? And, you know, we don't really know the answer to that question. That's an empirical question. And the system hasn't been in operation long enough really to know whether the publishers, the copyright owners, are making money or losing money because Google is scanning all this stuff in. Yep.
I also feel like if you're doing research with a book, I mean, you might be willing to go get it from the library, but it's for you to know whether it's worth it to get it from the library. It's great to be able to search for the term that you would be. So if there's something that's sort of related, but then you can search for the thing that you are really researching, then you know that you should go and get the book, and you're not kind of.
So there's a benefit to the reader, you say, right? But of course, there'd be a benefit to the reader if books were free. Right.
But if you were doing real research, you wouldn't cite from a Google book. You would get it from. You would try. You would.
Yeah, but you're using what you know. I'm going to press you a little bit on this because you know what you're saying is you're getting some benefit from the fact that Google has done this, right? Even if it's only to rule out, you know, that something is actually a useful source. And it's a benefit that prior to Google Books, you would have had to do something else, go to the library. And if everybody was trying to do it at the same time, then maybe the library would have had to buy an extra copy of the book. Or you would have been frustrated and found the book was checked out and you would have gone to the coop and looked at it there or something, right? There's some demand that this is satisfying, okay? And you're saying this is a good thing because it's now... It doesn't cost you anything, and your demand is more easily satisfied. And I'm just sort of suggesting that if taking the posture of the authors and publishers that say, well, but, you know, demand for our products is kind of like the way we stay in business. That's you know, we'll go out of business if the demand for our products is, you know, is frittered away by the digital explosion, right? That would be the pushback argument. I'm not saying which way I necessarily think of this. You had a comment?
Yeah, I was wondering how this being published on here differs from a blog or something which publishes a full copy of a song for the purposes of like a record review. Like, is it considered content, or is there an actual like copyright division?
It's dicey, I mean they do it, I know. But it's dicey for a blog to print the entire lyrics of a copyrighted song. And songs are almost inevitably copyrighted unless they're like medieval ditties or something. So, right? So I think Happy Birthday is still in copyright, actually. Okay. So these copyright, I mean, you know, certain copyright owners are more aggressive about defending their copyrights than others. And, you know, and various musical groups have adopted different postures about this. And there were interesting spats during the presidential campaign about the background music for Sarah Palin and whether that was so all that. But I don't think you can use the fact that bloggers print the lyrics of songs as a defense, because that's probably improper. Also,
what I was thinking about was whether or not like an actual music file is treated differently under copyright law from a printed text file, like or are they both considered generally content?
They're both the lyrics and the music would be copyrighted, or the lyrics and the audio, the actual recording. Somebody over here, yeah.
How does what Google
Yeah, so that's a good point. I think because Google shows more. I think you're right, because Amazon shows snippets too, right? And they'll do preview. But many of the, I should actually pause on, actually, I shouldn't say that. I think, but I'm not sure. Maybe somebody knows.
And for Amazon, so like, you know, you look at some books, and you'll actually can search the contents of the book. But a lot of times you'll see a link that says publishers, you know, click here to learn how you can make this book searchable. So I'm pretty sure it's an opt-in.
Amazon, right? So it's not at all. I take back the way I started. It's not at all like the Google Book situation, because here. You see, here's the other blown to bits. Here's the Amazon web page, and it says, click to look inside. I don't know, you know, surprise me, give me a random page. Loads one up, and it gives me a random page, okay? My publisher cut a deal with Amazon, and they shook hands on it and agreed, okay? And I probably, although I'm the copyright owner, or the three of us are the copyright owners, I probably agreed in my publishing contract with the publisher that it was okay for them to make that kind of deal with Amazon. So this is there's no copyright issue here, but only, you're right, it would raise the same questions if the publisher hadn't agreed, and sometimes the copyright owner doesn't agree, you know. And then it looks the same, but it's very, very different, because this is done on the basis of a private agreement between Amazon and the publisher. And Google Books, they didn't ask anybody. They just started scanning everything, and they've scanned an enormous number of volumes.
I would just say it's almost the same, except the difference between opting in to this, into the system versus opting out. So Amazon sets it up so that they'll include copies of a page of books that you can search, provided that the publisher makes an explicit agreement, whereas with Google, they just are taking on their own initiative to do everything. And they allow publishers to opt out, meaning if a publisher objects, then they'll remove it from their list. But this has very big practical implications, because the opt out approach of Google is going to have a lot more coverage than Amazon's opt in.
I guess I just think that's interesting, because like on the hand of Google Books, there's also an order from bookstore links.
Right.
So I think there's just as much advertising.
Yeah, right. That's part of the defense that Google puts up, is that it's actually steering, you know, it's actually generating. Yeah.
Does Google charge for that advertising?
Some of it and some not. I think I don't. I actually don't know. Are those like sponsored ads for actual bookstores, or are they just?
There's some sponsored ads.
And are there links to? There are also links to.
To like Barnes and Noble, Amazon.
Yeah, are there links to libraries? Sometimes they have links and say, you know, we can see from your IP address that you're in New York City and you can get this book for free at the New York Public Library. I don't want to do the experiment right now, but Google does actually direct you to places where it says you can get them. Of course, it makes no commitment that it will forever do that. It's, you know, this is a private company and it can do what it wants, and it's So, and you know, remember, Google is such an interesting company. Okay, what Google says and has always said its mission is. Google's mission is to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful. And there's nothing that is more consistent with that mission than scanning in every book in the world and making them visible to everybody in the world, right? So this is a perfectly natural thing for them to do. And, you know, they, you know, were able to get started doing it because they had some revenues from their search engine. Now let's just, for the sort of micro course here in constitutional law here, let's just remember, Marshall Lerner showed you this, but I want to do it. You know, here's in the Constitution the various things that the Congress can do. This, you know, starts back somewhere. Congress can do all of these things. And the copyright clause, the clause that deals with copyright, is one of these things that states that Congress can pass laws protecting intellectual property, but it does it with a concessive clause up front. You know, it's a little bit like the Second Amendment and this funny thing, you know, about why it is that there's, you know, that citizens have the right to own guns, as it caused so much. It says, to promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. Kind of, you know, so it's actually not a concessive clause the way it's written. I parsed it wrong here. But so the copyright clause says that one of the things that Congress can do is promote the progress of science and useful arts, right? And you know, this is like really, really important, and it's gotten so, you know, whenever you hear arguments about peer-to-peer file sharing or Google Books or any of these issues, you know, remember that this is what the copyright clause, and that this is the same clause that covers the patent. You know, half of this is about patent and half of it's about copyright. By securing for limited times to authors and inventors, authors would be copyright and inventors would be patents, the exclusive right to their respective writings for authors and then discoveries. So the theory behind this, and it's not the only theory that is extant in the world or in enlightened Western democracies even. The theory here is that Congress protects my copyright in Blown to Bits just enough, in theory, to provide me an incentive for keeping at writing more books. Right? It's supposed to be the real winner in the fact that authors write books is the public. That's the theory here, right? It's everybody who's going to benefit from the writings and discoveries that authors and inventors create. That's really what this clause is aimed at. The group this says, and the rewards to authors and inventors by giving them monopoly rights over the stuff they've created is in principle just a carrot to get us to do, you know, to get them to do useful and valuable things. There's another, you know, more sort of European version of this, and we could actually spend some time on talking about agreements that are going on now and worries about the Europeanization of American law through treaty practices, where, you know, authors and inventors have some God-given moral right to own and control their works. And it's not so much that there's this economic game that's being played with us for the public good, but that, you know, we have a kind of an inherent right. That we could bring up the European version of this. Yeah.
Well, I worked in book publishing last summer as an editorial intern at W.W. Norton, and I can see why publishers would kind of freak out about Google Books because they have to opt out of it, but I wonder if there's actually, they could turn and make it more profitable for them, because right now, you know, publishers have to sell books for 50% off to bookstores and then take back all the remainders and pay the bookstores right back for that. So really they can charge a lot for ebooks when there's no like real cost to produce those. And so if I just wonder if book publishing stopped being so like afraid right of moving beyond the book, they could work with Google. And
well, the answer is there's lots of experiments that people can try. You know, you can buy the Kindle edition of Blown to Bits for half of what it costs to buy the, or less than half, I think, of what it costs to pay for the bound copy. Interestingly enough, my publisher told me that the that they're, you know, I forget what, I can't, I'm not going to have the story right. Okay, so that's one experiment. And, you know, and you can look at the other headline from the Saturday's paper, which was that the Boston Globe may go out of business, like many other major urban dailies. This is a sort of shock because they haven't developed a business model to, you know, monetize the electronic versions that they have put up, and they're losing readership. So yes, there may be some things that publishers could try, but they didn't. Instead, they sued. Okay, they sued. The authors and publishers sued Google, and the thing was headed to court, and they reached an out-of-court agreement between them, so exactly that now, so that they too will have a kind of legal handshake governing Google's use of the bits that they have scanned in, unless an individual author or publisher chooses to opt out of the agreement, which would be probably, from a practical standpoint, foolish. So that's the Google Books settlement. If you Google or use Yahoo or Microsoft Search or any of the other many options that are possible here, you know, you can read the Google book settlement. It is 141 pages long without the appendices, and it is full of riveting prose, you know, of this sort of kind. And, you know, I have no idea what this clause is, but I'll just put it up there. And basically what it says is that since Google's going to be, if you want the whole book now in the future, and it's a copyrighted book, you'll be able to pay for it. Google will give it to you in a certain way, and the profits will be split up between Google and the one hand and the authors and publishers on the other hand. And authors and publishers or their representatives have agreed that this is fair, and Google's agreed it's fair, and it's now before a judge, the same judge who just dealt with Bernie Madoff, actually, interestingly enough. This guy's had some pretty interesting cases this year, to approve. And the odd thing about it is it's a very odd situation that we're in, because there's huge sort of public consequences to this. For one reason, because it seems extremely unlikely, if this goes through, first of all, there's huge public benefit to this for all the reasons that people have said. There's no, you know, absolutely no doubt about this. But there's also, you know, a very odd result, which is that Google de facto is going to have a monopoly on all the scanned books in the world. Because again, it's not impossible in principle that Microsoft could scan in everything, or somebody else with some huge capital thing. They'd have to enter now the competitive market, which Google has a big lead in, so there's always a competitive disadvantage to being second, but, you know, but so what? That's the way business is. That's how Microsoft itself got big in the first place, was by being first and better. But here, Google now has, going forward forever, a pass on scanning in new books, and is protected from ever being sued for copyright infringement for doing that. But if Microsoft or you or, you know, your little startup that you're going to start with all of the venture capital that's available to new Harvard graduates start scanning books in, you know, the authors and publishers are going to sue you just like they sued Google. And this settlement, which is a private deal between Google and the authors and publishers, won't cover you. So you're going to have to fight your own battle with the authors and publishers if you start trying to create an independent database with all of these scanned books in. So this is a sort of de facto monopoly thing being created. And the other interesting aspect of this, which you don't really think about, is what this story is about. And I'll post it, and then I really should move on here. Which is the which is the fact that there's really three categories of books. Okay, we said there were copyrighted books and there were public domain books that are in the public domain because they're out of copyright. There's the copyrighted books actually consist of two parts. It's copyrighted books where you know who owns the copyright, and copyrighted books where you don't know who owns the copyright but are still legally under copyright, because the way copyright now works is that books are automatically in copyright and it's almost impossible to uncopyright them. Even if you want to, it's very hard for an author to come along and say, I don't want to retain copyright in this work, I want to release it to the public to do whatever they want with. Because books are copyrighted by default. And, you know, if the copyright holder is dead and, you know, his estate went to his second wife and then she passed, you know, the thread to figure out who actually owns the copyright of books that are 50 or 60 or 75 years old is extremely, and particularly when the books have been out of print, so there's been no money changing hands for a long time. So there's this whole trove of human knowledge that exists happily to you in Widener Library and in the used book trade to some degree, which suddenly it's going to be possible to make lots of money on, right? There are all of these out of print books that are still in copyright that people are now suddenly going to, for the first time, actually going to be able to buy through some other mechanism other than finding the occasional used copy somewhere, right? This is like the infinite printing press that, you know, that the digital thing shows. So what is the objection? Challenge. What's the challenge? The challenge is that these works, which are called orphans, it's a very nice metaphor, right? They have no parents to take responsibility for them. The profits from those shouldn't go to Google and the authors and publishers. They should go to the, I mean, if we knew who the actual author was or the actual publisher was, you know, we knew who the actual copyright holder was, you know, the money ought to go to them. But if you don't know, why should the same revenue go to these parties? It ought to go to some other purpose. So so this is the challenge that is, there's a move to intervene in the settlement, to go to the judge and say, actually, this isn't fair to the general public, because the general public really ought to have the same access to those books that they have to the Hunchback of Notre Dame and these things that are in the public domain because they're out of copyright. What difference does it make whether they're technically in copyright or not if no one knows who holds the copyright?